All right, welcome back inside the EQC studios, and joining me on the top step, he's done it before, but not like this. He's one of my favorites. He is in the trenches with one of the best pitching staffs in baseball, most talented. And by the way, the coach of the year has a special nickname, Pete Woodworth. Welcome to the show, mate.
Thanks for having me. What's my nickname?
Well, you tell me, man. You tell me. I don't know. Someone ran past us in the dugout and mentioned it, and you kind of got a little bit annoyed by it. But your nickname, was it Cody?
Oh, Cody.
Cody. That's right. Cody. That's right.
Yeah.
Is that
Tony Erner? Call me Cody. Year.
That's right. Yeah. So is that something? I mean, has he been saying that all year last year, or is this something new?
No, he's been saying that since. Since the award came out, he's been giving me a hard time.
That's good, man. You should be proud of it, man. That was 2022, right? Coach of the Year, Pete Woodworth, and for good reason. Hey, listen, man, I want to start with this because, you know, a lot of people, you're in an interesting situation. You are in the trenches with these guys through thick and thin. The Mariners' starting rotation has a ton of pressure on it, really, because I mean, it's been ranked as the number one rotation, but these guys are not always perfect. Now, I want to ask you this right out of the gates. When you have one of these studs have a game, it's kind of rough. They all have them. Everyone has them, right? Whether you're high level or a guy who's just trying to, you know, scratch through the big leagues, you have a guy like let's say Luis Castillo in Toronto, right? What's kind of the process with you and him from day one after that, day two, into that bullpen session, and then into the next start?
Good question. Louis, George, Logan, Bryce, Emerson, Wu, like they all have their kind of checklist of what makes them great, what makes them unique. So you're just kind of going over what they do well and how well they did it. And you're just kind of debriefing that start. It usually always comes back to DTZ. Like if I know we're only 10, 12, 15 games in, it's been a very small sample, but the starts that go well, the guys pitch in good counts. The starts that don't go well, they pitch behind in counts. Sometimes it's that simple. Sometimes you got to dig a little bit deeper. You got to go to the next page. You got to go into the next chapter, but that's usually where it starts. And then you find the deficiencies, the holes, the mistakes that we made. And, you know, you go into a bullpen with an idea of how to work on that and how to improve that for the next start. Or maybe there's something glaring that guys are going to need to do versus this next opponent. You know, because different offenses are built different ways, and you have to kind of prepare your weapons for who's going to be in the box. But that's usually how a week-to-week, start-to-start, in-between outing kind of process goes.
And is that something like, you know, the next day, like obviously, you know, a guy has a rough one, you're not going to hit him up that night and say, hey, man, let's go, you know, grab a beer and talk it over. But is it the next day? Is it the bullpen session? Like what's the kind of the lead time before you start diving into it?
Yeah. Everybody's different. For some reason I was told early on, in my coaching career, don't talk after the game. let them sleep, let them enjoy their family, whatever it may be. After the game is not the best time. So the next day is kind of, or that night I'll get to work and rewatch the game. You know, maybe see it from a different angle. And the next day we'll kind of put some things together. But that second day when they throw their bullpen is usually when we sit down and kind of debrief the start and go through it. Not exactly pitch by pitch and walk through every inch of the outing, but definitely highlight the positives, and then again find the deficiencies, find the spots that the game got away from us. Usually a game is won or lost in four or five pitches. So kind of going back and finding those areas that it did get away from us and figuring out ways that we can combat that for the next start.
Hey, you mentioned something, right away. You said about the counts. I mean, I try and tell kids this all the time, and even just watching the games too. And I always go back to that. Sometimes it sounds boring, but I remember doing a breakdown. I was talking to some kids. I was out in Australia, and I was doing, I did Aaron Nola in the playoffs last year. I did Jordan Montgomery as well. And I did like a breakdown of when they're in these counts, this is the hard hit rate. This is the average. And everyone's like, I'm like, look, this guy makes a lot of money, but look how bad he is. If he lived in these counts, if he spent 80% of his time in these counts, he's not even in the big leagues at that point. And I try and tell kids that all the time. It sounds super boring, but like, how important is it? And how do you, how's it something? If it's a situation where, let's say, I'll take George Kirby out of the equation, but let's say like a Bryce Miller, right? Everyone talks about the stuff and gets into the ball behavior and analytics and everything else, but you can simply put it down to, man, when he's in bad counts, he's going to get hit.
It is that simple. And it's not foolproof. You pitch in good counts for 162 games, you're going to have a lot of success. There's going to be a game, there's going to be a stretch where you do get hit in good counts. But you're always going to get hit in bad counts. Like, that's just a given. So that's why we put so much emphasis on it. It is 100% proven. It doesn't matter if you throw 105. It doesn't matter if you have the best breaking ball in the world. I think that's been one of the most eye-opening things is like showing guys that like Munoz, Brash, Gilbert, Kirby, Luis, like it doesn't matter who you are, when you pitch in 2-1, 3-1 counts, they hit, and they hit the ball really hard, and they hit it really far, and they score a lot of runs when they're in those counts. And same thing, if you throw 86, if you pitch in good counts, you can win a Cy Young. It doesn't matter what's coming out of your hand. Pitching ahead is the key.
Yeah, the start of the year, it's been rough, man. I mean, like I said, there were so many expectations on this rotation, and everyone's going to go through some rough patches. But, for you, I mean, I don't think people realize this, but, you're on the road and you're dealing with this. How stressful is that for you? Like, when you're watching your guys, these dudes who are capable of so much, and they scuffle a little bit, or they have a full turn through the rotation, and there's just the one guy, pitching well, and the other guys are struggling. I mean, talk me through that from your perspective. How stressful is that for you?
We haven't had a lot of that in my 4 or 5 years here. There's always been a lot of consistency in our rotation, and it continues to just get more talented every year. I don't really feel the pressure of, oh, this is, this is one of the best staffs in the league. Those guys have just kind of continued to set standards and higher expectations for themselves. And they're not really paying attention to much else other than that. These guys are professional. They've done it. Three of these guys have been doing it for a couple years. Bryce and Emerson are getting their feet wet last year a little bit and are still, kind of new. But I feel like Bryce has been here a long time and Emerson been in the org a while. It's not like this is our first rodeo. But, you spend the off season away from the game and you're just running through all of the positive moments. Anytime, like coming back to Toronto, like there's a lot of positive feelings of coming to Toronto, of coming to this ballpark. Just the city in general, like we've had good times here. We won our first postseason game here. Like there's good vibes. You forget that we've also, got our teeth kicked in here. You forget losing 14-1 here. You forget the struggles. So, when those happen, it's kind of brand new all over again. And it sucks. It's not easy. It's not fun. but that's part of the season, and that's why that's why baseball's so difficult, is that you have to do this every day for 162.
It's interesting too, and you know, for you too, you mentioned you've been doing this a while, and you go in the off season and you're thinking to yourself, man, you know, your brain can really only wants to really process all the good stuff and everything else. But for you, like, how long, and from when you started, especially from when you started, I mean, you're coming into this situation. Who was the first, I'm trying to think, your first year, who was in the rotation in your first season as a major league coach? Who were some of the names? I'm trying to remember.
I had Marco.
Yeah.
You say 2020 was Justice Sheffield, Justin Dunn. And then the fifth spot was kind of Nick Margavichus, LJ Newsom. The fifth spot was kind of a rotational guy. He was in and out. Kendall Graveman started the season as a starter, kind of got hurt and moved to the pin. Taiwan Walker was 20 as well, or was that 21? I think that was 21 because that was a regular spring training. Marco and Yusei were kind of the headlines of the staff.
That's right. And now all of a sudden you get, you know, Luis Castillo, George Kirby, Logan Gilbert, you know, guys who are you know, ranking number one. When you have a guy like, let's say, going back to like Luis Castillo, when he first came in, you got, because you mentioned some of those rotations, and you know, Marco seems to be pretty, you know, just talking to him, he can, I feel like you and him would have a great relationship out the gates. And then you got some other younger pitchers who are coming up for the first time. Some of them you had in the minor leagues as well. Yeah. But if you have a guy like Luis Castillo coming in, who's had a bunch of success coming over, how long does it take for you to gain his trust? When you guys sit down on that day one, day two after a start, and for you to really dive in, how long does it take, do you feel like, and I guess it depends on the individual, but to gain their trust, to be like, hey, listen, man, this is what I'm seeing. This is what I want you to try. This is in this bullpen session. This is what we're going to go and try and get done.
We've been fortunate with whether it's been free agent signings or trades. Guys that we've acquired have been very open and like easily just jump right into the mix.
Yeah.
Whether it's starters or relievers. I don't know. Maybe we've been lucky or fortunate just to have good people that, you know, want to win and want to buy in and are easily trusting. But it happens fairly quickly. You know, everyone's kind of marching to the same tune, and those guys just kind of come in and fit right in. The Robbie Ray, I guess you can call it online dating, the interview, kind of get to know each other, Zoom call that we had, that off season, was apparent immediately. Like, hey, like this is the guy, like this is the human being that you want in the trenches. This is the guy you want leading the staff. I don't care what comes out of his hand. Like this is the guy. So, like I said, maybe we've just been fortunate to acquire just good human beings that you know assimilate very quickly to Mariner baseball.
When you have, let's say, a starting pitcher, right? Logan Gilbert last year with a split. This year, Bryce Miller with a split. How does that process start? Where does that come from? Like when Bryce sits down, it's not like he just wakes up one day and says, "Oh, I might just start throwing a split." Talk me through the process of how he gets to that place. What's that? What'd you say?
I said you'll be surprised with Bryce.
It Bryce seems is that way, very, man.
He's extremely curious. I think both those guys are. I think those are good examples of pitchers who are extremely curious on how they can become the best pitcher they could be. They're extremely curious of what other people are doing and how they're doing it, why they're doing it. They're watching other guys in the league. They're kind of dialed in on the guys pitching against us at times. Logan was kind of the, obviously Logan, you know, arrived before Bryce. he arrived to the island first, but he's always been one to turn over every stone to figure out how he can become the best version of himself. And a lot of that early on, when you're a young pitcher in the big leagues, you don't really know who you are as a major league starter, especially. You're trying to figure that out, and there's not a lot of things, you know, other people can do to help you figure out who you are. Like, you have to go through that process yourself. You have to make mistakes. You have to try things. You have to experiment. You have to try to emulate other people to figure out who you are. There's not many people who just show up and are solidified and confident in, this is who I am, and I don't give a fuck what you think about it. This is what I'm going to do. This is why I'm great. I don't care what other people are doing. And that's George. Like, George is extremely unique in that. He knows who he is. He's known who he is for a while. He's added some things and done some things, but like the DNA and the structure of George has been very consistent for a long time. Where like Logan, you know, Logan went to college with the same place that DeGrom and Kluber went. So there's always like, he's been watching those guys for a while. He's been watching Verlander and Scherzer and Wheeler and a handful of these, you know, elite pitchers for a long time and trying to figure out what they do. They're the best. What do they do? I want to do that. Which again, isn't like, that's pretty smart. What do the best do? Try to emulate that. But you also have to figure out how you do that personally. Cause you can't be Jacob DeGrom. Only Jacob DeGrom can. So I don't want to say it's a struggle, but that's the fun evolution of young pitchers is watching them kind of figure out who they are. I know I'm getting away from it, but, so implementing new pitches, I've always thought like, all right, we got to wait for the off season to do that. You know, let's stick with our strengths in season. But every year we've implemented more and more pitches. We've, you know, adjusted grips and adjusted movement and done a bunch of different stuff in season. For both of those examples with the split, those were off season projects. Granted, Bryce was throwing splits in throwing programs last year, as was Logan the year before. Like,
well, is that again, something? Okay, but you mentioned throwing a year before. Is that something that they're not just messing around with that? Is that some, or that maybe they are? Or if you like, hey Bryce, listen, man, this, I know you're not really comfortable with your changeup. He even said that. He goes, I think he said his worst split's better than his best changeup. But is that something where you guys go to them and say, hey man, this could be an effective pitch? Or you mentioned, I could just see Bryce Miller watching someone's nasty split or even one of his teammates and be like, hey man, hey Woody, I want to throw that next year. Where does it stem from? Like, what was the first conversation?
The first conversation I remember is I'm playing catch with somebody and Bryce is playing catch 50 feet away. And I look over and I see him tell the guy a split. And I go, what are you doing? He goes, I just want to try it out. That's usually where it starts. Like they just try it. They just experiment with different grip. You know, he watches Logan do it. He doesn't like his changeup, I guess. So he just, you know, experiments with it.
Right.
The tough part with like adding that kind of pitch in season is just the workload and the dosage of usage. You know, so that is why the last 2 years, both of those guys, like as soon as the off season hit, like, all right, we know the focus, we know we need to add this pitch. How are we going to appropriately do it in your off season? To help it just blend and build right in so that you're not, you know, throwing a ton of them with a ton of usage, with a new pitch, with new forces on your arm. Like, let's do it smart, you know, 3 to 5 every session. and building from there, what have you. So that's kind of where the split for both those guys the past 2 years. It was just like a experiment, try some things in season in throwing program, and then in the off season, really diving in and every throwing session trying to find a comfortable grip with consistent movement.
But real quick on that, when you say experiment, like trying something, is that, you know, bullpen session? And bullpen sessions are way different to when I used to throw them. If I experimented back in the day, it'd be like, hey, just jump down. I'm just going to throw this split. Check it out. Oh, sweet. But now, I mean, we're talking experimenting where, like, you've got, like, the track man out there and you're getting all this and he's, like, letting it eat and really seeing what happens? Or is he just like, oh, I just want to see what it feels like? Like, how deep are we talking experimentation with it?
we didn't have any hazmat suits on for Bryce's split. We didn't go that far in the experimenting last season. Again, the you want to keep the guys focused on their strengths and what they do well. You don't want to spend a ton of time on a pet project when you got the Astros in 3 days. You're not going to be to Yordan and Kyle Tucker in 3 days. So why waste any reps on it now?
Right, for sure.
But there have been a handful of guys. Like, again, the technology and the resources that we have, you can get off the mound at 80%, and you can actually kind of see the beginnings of what that pitch could be, and have an idea of what that shape could look like, how it's coming out of their hand, at all of the metrics that you can measure, instead of just, throwing one to your catch partner with him down and him being like, yeah, man, that looks sick. It's good.
Hey, that's how it used to be. Back in the day, it used to be like, oh, dude, that's filthy. Hey, on that note, I had in an off season one time, I'm trying to like get a job, right? So I'm like, I think I had like the Red Sox scout come and watch me like in 2 weeks. And I'm facing live hitters and I started messing around with a knuckleball. I'm not going to name names here, but a very good hitter is in the big leagues now. I was like, dude, that's filthy. That knuckleball is filthy. And I tried throwing it to hitters and it just got absolutely smashed. And my hopes of having this brand new career as a knuckleball just went down the drain. Like I was like, okay, I'm getting older. It's a struggle for me to get back into big league camp. And I throw this knuckleball. Visually, it looks amazing. Like it looks sweet. Yeah. And then it just sits on a tee, like an invisible tee, and dudes are just crying. He goes, ah, no, that's terrible. I'm like, oh man, dreams crushed. And a week away, I've got this Red Sox guy trying to see me pop the best velocity I've got in January. You know, that's brutal. But hey, listen, speaking of that, man, speaking of trying to pop velo, now the big talk around baseball is arm injuries. And people have asked me, hey, man, what's the solution, right? And I'm like, there is no solution. Like, I feel like it's going to get way worse than it's going to get better. Not worse in a sense of, pitch quality or – but it's just going to be one of these things that, like, guys, the stakes, in my opinion, the stakes are high, right? Like, if you want to compete at that level, you got to have really good stuff and you have to figure out a way to somehow combat the things that go with it. But look, you're in the trenches with these pitchers. You've got these high-end dudes, some of the best pitchers in the game, a couple All-Stars last year, Luis Castillo, George Kirby. What's your take on all this talk? I know there's been a big batch to start the season of injuries, but from your perspective, being on the front lines with the best pitchers in the game, a training staff, what's your take on everything we're seeing right now with some of the recent Tommy Johns and UCLs we've been seeing all over the place?
All right, I need to start this with a disclaimer of I am not a medical professional.
We're going to have the print down the bottom of the screen. You're all good.
Yeah. I did not go to school for the human body or anatomy. The science part is not my strength. But we've been building bigger and bigger cars, faster cars, for the last 10 years. We've become more intelligent in how to, build the human body to move quicker, to throw harder, to run faster, to create more force. We've built the cars extremely fast, and with that comes some risk. And, you know, there's a lot of different variables. There's a lot of people talking about the pitch clock, you know, taking away rest in between sets. Can it be detrimental? Sure, of course. You know, you take away the friction and some of the sticky stuff. Could it be affecting guys? Yeah, sure. You know, different ramp ups for spring training. There's just so many variables that you can't say like, this is it. This is the reason. If we cut this, we'll cut down on injuries.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know what the solution is. I don't know what the problem is. I wish I had an answer. We are fortunate to have a high performance, a training and a strength group that, you know, really takes pride in this and keeping our guys on the field. You can't protect everyone and keep everyone on the field, but I don't know. It just seems like it happens every year in the first month of the season.
Yeah, I agree, you know, guys, man.
Guys ramping up for spring training. You look at the free agents that signed really late. Just looking, Blake Snell made his first start last night. Like Jordan Montgomery, I don't even know if Jordan Montgomery is with anybody yet. You know, a lot of these guys don't have normal spring trainings. But even that, you know, the recovery aspect of the off season, and then having an ample and proper buildup in the spring training, it's not easy. Everyone's built different. Everyone's tissue is different. Everyone has different miles on their truck. You know, so just setting a straight plan for everybody to follow, it's not easy. It's not easy to do. I know I've been rambling a lot on this.
No, hey, it's great. Are you kidding? That's awesome. No, it's great. I love it because it's important, man. I mean, there is really no answer. But, like, do you – and the hard thing is, too, and you've been around it because you've played, now you coach, and you see it, and you keep up with guys in the off-season and everything else. But there's just so many different philosophies. Like, some guys are like, oh, hey, don't stop throwing when the season ends. You've got to maintain some kind of – you know, otherwise, if you don't use it, you lose it. Some guys, no, I'm not throwing till Christmas. Yeah, and I'm, you know, there's obviously this plyo ball routine. I mean, I was, put it this way, man, like 2013, I was a big plyo ball guy, like doing the Tom House stuff. I had to go hide in the corner to go do it because the pitching coordinator with the Red Sox, if he found me doing it, he was going to be, you know, he's going to be upset with me. He's going to be, oh, you're going to blow your arm out. I'm like, hey, man, it's actually helping me because I'm actually getting my velo back. I get it. You got to be able to recover from it and everything else. But, you know, just in regards to that too, like what's kind of from a player's perspective, you know, whether it be last year, this year, like what's kind of their take on it? I know you have so many young pitchers now and they're all doing, you know, this, you said building bigger engines, bigger, faster, you use the analogy of cars, but, you know, like when people start throwing in the pitch clock and all these other variables, like what's like kind of like the main consensus from like, from a pitcher standpoint that you hear that they say, hey, look, I reckon this could be it, or this is what I do to avoid, or what is it from their perspective?
To avoid what?
Well, just to avoid like the injuries and to stay on the field for 6 months, or, hey, man, to avoid, you know, having to get Tommy John or whatever it may be, like in a recovery process. What's kind of like the main thing, or does anyone have that conversation, especially now, saying, oh, yeah, well, look, the pitch clock, man, I can't adjust to that. Or the fact that, you know, six-man rotation or any of this kind of stuff. Like, what's kind of like the general consensus there?
Again, maybe we've just been fortunate to have a good group. No one's ever really bitched or complained. Every year they change some rules. You know, when they banned the sticky stuff, like, guys had to adjust. It was early in my major league career, and I'm not gonna lie, like, we didn't use that when I played, sunscreen and rosin, but like, I don't know, I didn't have enough experience with actual like substance to know like how to use it or how to teach guys to use it. So like listening to Verlander talk about the baseballs and the substance stuff, like that was kind of before it was before my time. But talking to guys about it, like guys did say like it helped me grip the baseball. Like it wasn't so that I could add to my spin rate and make my stuff better. It was because it has always kind of been there, and that's what helped me create friction and get a feel for the baseball. So when that kind of, when they took that away, there, you know, guys were a little frustrated the first week because they didn't have that. It was a different feeling. They had to kind of grip the baseball. I know Glasnow kind of went through a good piece on that of how it affected him. But the rules are the rules. So, you know, within 72 hours, you had to figure out how to throw a baseball without it. So again, like within a week, it was gone. And then you never really heard about it again. And same thing with a pitch clock. Like, oh man, what are we going to do? We can't walk around the mound for a minute in between pitches. Guys adjusted to it. And then guys learned how to use it. And then now guys are using it to their advantage. Bryce Miller is one of the best of using the clock and taking all 18 seconds for his body to recover and get everything he can out of this next pitch. Like I said, any of the rules that have changed anything, like our guys have just kind of adapted, adjusted, evolved, and learned how to use it to their advantage. From a recovery point, we have so many more resources and tools than we even did when I first started in the big leagues 5 years ago. Again, like our training staff does a great job of not just being hands-on and helping these guys work through their recovery process, but you know, just also the world that we live in and the technology that we have and the different modalities that these guys can use to help them recover in between starts and in between outings.
Hey, if you were okay, well, that brings me to my next question. If you had, let's say, you know, these 15, 16-year-old, because you see it in the youth game all the time, right? Like, dudes want to throw hard. Like, they want to show up some showcase throwing gas to stand out. If you were going back to Florida, right, where you live in the offseason, you're coaching a group of six or seven, and you had them for a good couple months, what's kind of like, not to build velocity, I feel like they all are so good with that, but in regards to, like, staying healthy, recovering, and some of those elements, what would be some advice or some simple things you could say to a 15, 16-year-old to say, look, yeah, man, look, we can get you to throw hard, all right? But this is how you're going to stay healthy. Like, what are some things, obviously, you've learned being around the training staff, around some of these guys you get to see day in and day out?
Play other sports. Be athletic. Let your arm recover. That's what I would do. I would have a 4 month of no baseball, of no throwing.
Yeah.
And I would help build the athleticism in another sport, in another area. I'd probably choose basketball.
Oh yeah. Fair enough. Yeah. No, I'm with you, man. Like, are you choosing basketball? Because it's a good crossover, a good explosive strength, we talking that, or are you just talking about because you like shooting hoops?
Oh no, I always wanted to play basketball, but I wasn't
it is
very
fun
good.
I'm terrible. Yeah, I'm but terrible looking, too.
Looking at just the different sports and how I would help build a pitcher or build a baseball player, I would have them play the other sports and the athletic explosive ones. I don't know. I wasn't allowed to play football because I would get hurt. So I think there's always just that in the back of my mind of, well, you don't want to get hurt playing football because then you can't play baseball. You can get hurt playing anything. But the moving, the jumping, the athleticism that basketball and basketball training requires would fit nicely for any athlete, but definitely for baseball athletes. I played soccer growing up, and it helped me be a really good runner. And you know, like if you were a pitcher, you were running. If you weren't pitching, that's kind of changed now. I would do more, shorter movement, explosive jumping.
I'm with you, man. The explosive stuff. I remember, I dated a basketball player back when I was like 18, 19. I was terrible at basketball, but I was like, man, like the explosive strength. The other thing, I used to train, this is back way back in the day, I used to train with a sprint coach, and man, it helped me. We were on the track a bunch because I was a big dude, man. I had to be more explosive, like straight up. Travis Bazana, a kid down at Oregon State, someone asked me just recently, he's killing it. And he's got all this power this year, but one of the things, his foundation is that just that explosive strength, it's trained with a sprint coach. He was a sprinter, basically doing full-blown sprint workouts every single day on a track, and obviously hitting the gym and everything else. But it's interesting, but good luck. You're up against it when you're talking about that travel ball stuff. It's year-round, man. They pay those fees for 12 months. They're expensive. You're going to have to get in that tournament in December right before Christmas for no reason whatsoever. Good luck. Even in these cold states too, man, these kids are paying 12 months of fees. It's like, and you're going off to Vegas or something. And I'm like, guys, like you've only been like playing catch in your quote unquote off season for 3 weeks. Now you're going to go just ramp it up and go, dish out four innings worth straight out of the gates. It's crazy. Hey, listen, I want to, before I let you go, I've kept you too long here. I'm going to throw like just a rapid fire at you. We've got five starters. We're going to stay on the starting rotation here. And we're going to do a thing where if I'm going to go through each of the pitchers, and I'm going to just say, it's going to be a good day if George Kirby does what? And you can just go, like, what's that number one thing for him? Obviously, there's so many. But so if you see something from him early, man, you know it's going to be a good six, seven innings domination. So we'll start with Luis Castillo. So it's going to be a good day for Luis Castillo if he does what?
If he's throwing 98.
Okay, can you elaborate why?
Well,
that's good. No, it's good. I'm curious because I said watching him in Toronto, I said that like if he was getting to the top of the strike zone, and you know more than me, I'm like, man, he wasn't at the top of the zone at all, and I feel like he was trying to get there, but he wasn't with that fastball. But if he's throwing 98, talk me through it.
Yeah, when Louis's throwing hard. It's really good. You could say that for anybody. But when Louis comes out in the first inning, the first pitch, when he's lighting it up, when it's coming out, it's going to be a good day.
Okay. For George Kirby, it's going to be a good day for George when he does what?
When he's throwing his breaking balls really hard.
Not for strikes. We're talking he's just got to throw that thing hard. Is that right?
He always throws them for strikes. So. I'm never worried about George not throwing strikes. It's when he's ripping his breaking balls. When the slider and curveball have some bite, it's going to be a good day.
Okay. And when you say bite, because I remember beginning of the season, he was like, he made some comment, I'm trying to remember, getting it below the strike zone. Like he was struggling to get it below the strike zone, or it could have been last year even. Is that, does that help? Like obviously if he's throwing that pitch, if there's a couple extra, miles per hour with that spin, sure. Is that helping him get to underneath the strike zone?
For sure. I don't want to say the harder he throws it, but the harder he rips it, the gotcha. Better they are. It usually ends up underneath the zone where you want it to go. Instead of just kind of floating it in there. That's how you throw strikes. But again, George knows how to throw strikes. When he's ripping breaking balls, then he's got five weapons to put you away with, not just to throw strikes with.
All right, Logan Gilbert, if he's doing this, it's going to be a good day.
If he's throwing fastballs, glove side, in his pregame bullpen, it's going to be a really good game.
Okay.
If his pregame bullpen, he's getting his glove, his fastball glove side, everything's on time, Logan's in a good place. He's 6 foot 14. He's got the longest arms and legs. There's a lot of moving parts. It's tough. It's tough at times for him to get everything synced up. If in the pen before the game he can get glove side with his heater, that means he's in a good place. Everything just kind of falls in line from there.
Okay, it's going to be a good day for Bryce Miller if he does what?
Uses both his fastballs.
Okay. Yeah, that's something. Is that for real, or is that just something Baseball Savant was picking up? That two seam. When did he pick? That was like maybe Houston last year. Did he start throwing that, or is that just something that it's just became more prevalent? Like, where did that two seam? When did that start with him? Later in the year last year, right?
His first month, he only threw a four seam fastball for five starts and struck out the entire galaxy.
Yeah. yeah.
And then the league figured out, hey, this is all this guy has. He's got this one fastball.
Right.
We saw how effective it was for Louis with two fastballs. This all kind of started with Robbie Ray a couple years ago. Right. You know, wins the Cy Young with the two pitches, the four seam and the slider. Figures out, you know, the league will figure that out, and they'll pick one, and they'll hunt one, and they'll hunt one area. So having two fastballs just kind of disrupts any offensive plan against you. So more and more guys started doing it. And then we started figuring out how to identify guys that could throw one, that could throw really good ones, which is kind of what Trent and our group identified with Bryce, Brian Wu, Emerson. So kind of last year in spring training, putting a two-seam in Wu's hands and Emerson's hands and just getting those guys kind of acquainted to two fastballs.
Right.
Didn't think Bryce would need one because the four-seam was so freaking powerful. But,
yeah,
again, two fastballs are better than one, and he's kind of taken off with it.
All right, let's go. Brian Wu, I know he's on the IL, so don't say, hey, he's got to be healthy. But when Brian Wu is – it's going to be a good day for Brian Wu when he does what?
When he's attacking right down the middle.
Okay. Why is that? Like, because the one thing I was watching him last year, and he threw like 70% fastballs to lefties in the month of September. I don't know if it was just because there's less lefties or whatever it may be. But I talked to you, I remember last year, about that changeup with him, finding that pitch or some other secondary pitch where he's confident to get lefties out. But that fastball, man, is really, really good. So when you say fastball's down the middle, like it can't be that simple, right, with him, or is it that good?
It can be that simple. His two fastballs are probably the most unique. It's such a low slot. And there's so much separation between the two. So like when he throws a four seam middle, it's going to look like it's coming from the sprinkler and going straight up. Right. And then he throws a sinker out of that same spot and it goes the complete opposite direction. You just kind of play that game and shoot those two fastballs, and you aim right down the middle. We would get into trouble when he tries to pitch and be fine and paint and move the ball around. Like, no, dude, it's power stuff.
Yeah.
Put it in fifth gear, put the brick on the pedal and let it go, man. Don't be cute.
Yeah, right. Interesting. Now, what about Emerson Hancock? When Emerson, it's going to be a good day for Emerson Hancock when he does what?
When he's making him swing at his changeup.
Okay. Righties and lefties?
Yeah, that pitch is disgusting. It's really good. Yeah. So good. It'd be like a I heard it a handful of times in the past couple of years. Like, a guy has a pitch that's so good, like, don't even swing at it. You can't hit it. Don't swing at it. I remember that was a Shohei Ohtani splitter hitting approach. You can't hit it. So if you see a split, just shut it down. Yeah, it's a really good pitch. He's just learning how to unleash it and challenge guys with it and break bats with it.
Hey, listen, I am going to bug you later on this season. I'm going to try and get down to a bullpen session, if that's all right. I want to watch, like, Luis. I want to see you guys working it out in between starts, if I can. Maybe check out Luis Castillo. Stay out of his way, but I'd love to just watch that process, man, in between starts, because there's so much stuff that happens that people just don't see.
That'd be a really good one. Like I said, our guys are good people. They don't care if you want to come to the bullpen.
I'd love it.
George threw a bullpen. One of the workers from T-Mobile is 3 feet away from him. He's standing there. The mound is very, very intimate bullpen at T-Mobile. And he is chirping him the entire time while eating fried chicken, just right in his ear. Nothing negative.
That'll be me.
Positive chirps.
I'll bring some fried chicken down. That is awesome.
Luis Castillo would be a fun one. He obviously wouldn't mind at all. Very, very laid back. Logan's are a little bit more scientific. Yeah. Logan's very detailed in what he does. Bryce's are always fun. If you know Bryce Miller, you know his bullpens are going to be fun. Right. Emerson's are very professional. It's to the point. There's no messing around. There's no really looking at the track man. Like, he's here to execute. And George kind of does the same script every single time, and doesn't miss spots. So it's kind of boring.
I'll avoid that one then for sure. But listen, Pete, I don't want to keep you too long, man. You're on the road right now. You're about to head to the field, but I just want to say a massive thank you. And by the way, we didn't even get to this too. I don't know if you can see this, but look who's front and center. I'm trying to make sure this is focused in on the camera here, but the bobblehead, big thanks to your old man. Hopefully he's listening. I love this. This is the centerpiece. By the way, he did smash. His feet are broken, but I got him back. I got him fixed and he's good. He's a big part of this new TV show we're cranking, but big thanks, Pete. I appreciate it. And I'm going to hit you up, man, some of these bullpen sessions. I'm going to get like a 6-man camera crew down there and just bug the life out of some of these dudes, getting their face while I'm eating fried chicken for sure.
Well, why don't you get off the mound?
Listen, I don't want to embarrass anyone. You put that. Actually, you know what? Let's just take that back. All right. I have cranked up a Trackman or a rap solo and just said, oh, yeah. Well, and it's just pathetic, dude. It is pathetic. Like, I'm looking at these numbers. I'm watching these guys. I'm trying to compare myself against some of the dudes you're rolling out. I'm like, okay, let's just turn the power switch off. It's pretty pathetic these days.
You and Farquhar can go back to back.
I guarantee you, I bet he still gets off the mound, doesn't he? He still lets it rip. I guarantee it.
He throws every day. I haven't seen him get off the mound yet, but
what about you? Are you getting off the mound or what?
I got off the other day in Milwaukee.
Okay.
Got it up to 86.
So are you cranking, are you using like the technology, or are you just like, I mean, you have to, right? If you're throwing out of the bullpen.
Track on,
so what are we talking, spin rate?
Oh, I don't know. I try to see how hard I can throw. I'll throw a couple curveballs and I'll try to see if I can hit 90.
Dude, hey, listen, man. If you're cranking it up to 86 in Jordans, I guarantee you're not wearing spikes, right?
No. No, just tennis shoes.
Listen, for those of you watching and think, oh, 86. No. That's impressive, man. That on dirt in tennis shoes for a coach. Someone who's done playing, that's legit, man. I'm seriously, like, I'm not joking. That's like, I'm kind of extremely impressed listening to that. I'm not joking. It's pretty good.
Not when I reckon I can pump Munoz just thrown and it was 101, 86. Very, very slow.